Sabbath blessings, everyone. If you can kneel, let's start with prayer. Heavenly Father, thank you so very, very much for this Sabbath day, this beautiful day. Thank you for giving us all that we needed to get through this week. And thank you for the hugs that we had during the trials. Thank you also for blessing us with the forgiveness of sin, cleansing us from all unrighteousness, and blessing us with the latter rain if we are so worthy. We do pray that we are in that generation, but if we're not, thank you for giving us the tools necessary to teach our young people so that they can be ready to do the work. Please bless everyone here in attendance, on the phone, on the radio, or wherever, in the conference room as well, and those that will be listening to these sermons and studies next week or next year. And thank you so much for blessing everyone on the prayer list in every way that they need to be blessed, be it a hug or a spanking. Thank you for giving us those things that we need so that we can go forth and glorify you like no other. Please bridle my tongue and any tongue that speaks so that you alone are being glorified. And thank you for accepting this prayer and also for blessing all those that are on the prayer list that are in need of salvation, physical or even spiritual healings. And please accept this prayer, Father, in the name of your Son, who is our King, Savior, and Commander in this holy war. In his name is Jesus Christ. Amen. Amen and amen. Hey, hold on. I gotta do something over a little bit here. Just give me a second. I got something pretty interesting in the FedEx came today, and I, as much as I don't like them doing that on Sabbath, you can't stop them. They just pull in, and all of a sudden they're on your door. But you're not buying anything, and so they just hand it to you and leave. It really shocked me. I'll share with after the church service what it is they brought. It has to do with the bus benches. I did not expect this because they didn't tell me they were going to do this. So hold on. Okay. All right. I want to welcome everybody that's new up there on the top, Mandy and Johnston. And if either one of you want the ability to text, there's a yellow banner that pops. Well, when you first come in, you'll see that yellow banner, and all that yellow banner is really saying that if you have the smiley faces, welcome, you're new. But to protect us and to protect you, we make sure that the texting is not on for any new people until such a time as we get used to you or you get used to us. But if you want texting, just send me an email. And there's a click here on that yellow banner. And if you missed the yellow banner, don't worry. You can scroll up or scroll down to find it. Or just wait. Pops up every 15 minutes. So there was something else I wanted to mention too, but I forget. So no big deal. And if you want to read along with the... and thank you again, Brother Joe, for reminding me. In regards to the servers, they are now off. But if you want to read along with the study, we are in study lesson number 27, which is titled Recognizing God's Ownership. And it's, of course, mostly all about the tithe. And we're almost done with this study. And we are on question number 33. And there's only one more after that. So maybe we'll get them both done today. I don't know. All depends on how the Spirit moves. So question number 33. If we don't have as much wealth as we would like, what should we do? And Hebrews 13, verse 5 says, okay, it says, let your conversation be without covetousness and be content with such things as you have. For he hath said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. Thank you, Brother Sean. Thanks for posting it in the room there. So as we know, this has been the ongoing thing throughout the study on top of giving to God what is his as your first fruits. And when we do as his word commands, we won't be tempted to use the tithe or the love offerings to put the things we want on our top shelf, if you will. You know, and of course, 9 times out of 10, we don't really need them anyway. And this is what I found out, just the way I am. I'll not buy something over and over and over again. You know, I'll look at it and want it, but I'll just say, do I really need it? You know, and I won't go. One can see that though, that this is how Satan works to pull people away from the Lord. I recall talking to a young man many years ago on the street who was convinced he was not blessed of God because he didn't have all the things he wanted in life. The prosperity churches he frequented convinced him that unless you have all that you want in life, and unless you can keep up with the Joneses when they pull into the driveway with a new car and you can't get that new car, you cannot possibly be blessed of God. In fact, I recall one of these pastors, I guess you call them, that he trusted, stated on television, no less, that if you're poor, you cannot bless others at all. Really? How many nickels did John the Baptist have to rub together? Seriously. And that's just one of many patriarchs and prophets of old that, it's not about the world. It's about, doing our duty while we're visiting this planet. And then when we go home, yeah, we'll have what we need. You know, when we crave the things we want and are not satisfied with the things God gives us, we will eventually come to the same mindset of that young man, to think that we're not blessed by God. And if that lie is allowed to fester on unchecked in our heart, we will eventually grow to hate the Lord because he's not giving us all the things that we want in life. Or allowing us to do all the things we want to do in life. That's another reason a lot of people put the Bible down. They'll read it. They'll get all zealous. Like the parable of the sowing of the seeds. Some falls on rocky soil because some people, they accept the message with joy and they spring up real fast. We've all seen them. They come in and they're all excited. And, I've seen this for 30 some odd years. Even as a Sunday keeper, I've seen this. And they're all excited. They're telling everybody about Jesus. And all of a sudden, one day, they read in the Bible, they can't drink alcohol because it'll defile their body. All of a sudden that Bible gets closed, loudly too, and that's never opened again. I recall another young soul, this time it was a young woman, who was convinced God is never there for her because she cannot get the money to buy a car or she cannot get enough money to, keep ahead of the bills. And she has no hope because God won't give her the money to go to school so as to learn how to make, you guessed it, more money. But I know for a fact this young woman was offered all these things by her parents. They offered her free room and board. They offered her the money to go to school. They even offered her a brand new car. All she had to do was move back home. That is what the Lord was giving her. But because her parents were Christians, she would not move back home. She couldn't do it. She couldn't deal with the rules and regulations. The Lord openly showed her He wanted to give her all she needed, but she openly showed him she only wanted those things without his love and rules and regulations, as she called them. She wanted those things so as to please her flesh. Hopefully she'll grow out of that. Because being young, yeah, we all have a problem when we're younger. We don't see things clearly, even though we think we know all that. I remember when I was 16, I was telling my dad, "You don't know nothing. I've been around." Now, keep in mind, my dad's in his 40s now, right? And I'm 16. And I supposedly know more about the world than he does. Makes no sense. Like now, I'm climbing uphill into the 60s, right? And I have younger children, of course. Obviously, you got to. They always got to be younger. And let's say if they're in their 30s or even if they're 40s. Let's say I'm in my 80s and they're in their 50s. And they still think that they know more about the world than I do. I says, how is that possible? That's just not possible. But see, I don't want to know more about the world. My wife and I, we were talking about this earlier. I think it was Brother Bennett and I were talking about that. We were talking about this earlier. Okay. Knowing the things of the world and knowing the things of the Lord are two different things. Which one of the reasons... Oh, yeah, it was Brother Bennett, because we were talking on the phone earlier. And because I remember with my dad, and this used to upset him, when I started getting into the scriptures and I had left the Catholic Church. And I had only stepped out 2 years now, maybe, 2 or 3 years tops. And he used to always have priests come over to visit once in a while because, he had, I guess, friends in the priesthood I don't want to think this, but there's a strong possibility because I know one of my brothers was molested by one of the priests. But these guys would come around because there's 11 kids, you know, that was their thing. And, but what got my dad was, this is, look, man, you've only been studying the Bible 3 years, let's say. I think it was 2 or 3 years. And he says, you mean to tell me that you know more than these theologians? And let's just say we put 3 priests in this room. And let's say they're all in their 50s. And so they've all had at least 20 years of theological study. So they think. You know, that's what they tell you, but they don't. But let's just say that they did. So that's 60 years combined. And I know more than they do in the 3 years. I says, well, I may have studied areas that they didn't. You know, this I try to explain. I says, you know, I looked at things differently. I mean, even if I studied the Bible 80 years, I know a teenager can come up to me and show me something I didn't even realize before. I'm not going to look at mankind as the, you know, the end all. I'm going to look at that which is written. And if a young man or a young woman has to come up to me to show me something that I missed in the scriptures, well then, oh, so be it, you know. Praise the Lord. But the study also shares. And the reason I went into that area is because of our kids. We all have kids. Well, not all of us, but you know, most of us have children. And they have a tendency, because I know I was one of those, tough love. You know, in the 70s, remember the tough love thing? For those of us who are in their 50s and 60s, you remember the tough love thing that the government tried to use as an example to, you know how like, I think it was Nancy Reagan with the just say no thing? I think that was in the 90s. 80s or 90s. Well, in the 70s, it was tough love, you know, because the teenagers were acting out. Well, yeah, of course they're going to act out because you just came out of the 60s with all that anti-government stuff, and so they were trying everything they could to prevent the kids that they were already brainwashing to come out of the high schools with a mindset that they didn't much want them to come out with, you know, because the school, I mean, look what's going on now with the transgender thing. They want the kids to be conditioned so that by the time they get out of high school and a year later start voting, they have a mindset that has already been preconditioned or indoctrinated, or the old-fashioned word being brainwashed, so that when it comes time to vote, they're going to lean in the direction of the left because they're the ones that control the schools. So anyway, the study also shares, better is a little with the fear of the Lord. And that's reverent fear. We're not shaking our boots all scared he's going to throw us in hellfire, because he's not. If you're obedient, you know he's your father. He's not a tyrant. So better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble therewith. Proverbs 15:16, right? And then Solomon also said in Proverbs 30, verses 7 to 9, two things have I required of thee. Deny me them not before I die. Now, I always loved this one too, because it was all I could do in my younger years to get two nickels to rub together. But he said, remove far from me vanity and lies. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food convenient for me, lest I be full and deny thee. And say, who is the Lord? In other words, I've got it handled. I'm rich. I'm going to fill my barns and be eat, drink, and be merry. Right? So who's the Lord? He ain't doing any of this, even though the Lord did it all, right? And only asks us for 10% back to test us to see if we'll do it right. And then, of course, a love offering, whatever number we want. But he's, you know, he doesn't want to be tempted to say who is the Lord, because he's got that relationship. I mean, how many times have you heard me and some of the other people in the church family say, look, I'm going to obey the Lord because I'm not messing up this relationship with him. It ain't happening. I like having my prayers answered. So, lest I be full and deny thee and say who is the Lord, or lest I be poor and steal and take the name of my Lord or my God in vain. You know, because even if no one's watching, the Lord is watching, as are the angels, especially that one with that inkhorn. And so if you steal, claiming to be a Christian as your life's walk is illustrating to all those that look on. You remember the story about the guy with the paper clips? Yeah. As far as anybody looking on, it looked like he was stealing, which in fact he was, even though the boss didn't know he was going to replace those clips in the morning with a full box, and he was only taking a half box. But because all the stores were closed, he was going to take the half box, go home on his way to work, pick up a brand new box, give it to the boss. No harm done, so he thought. He took the name of the Lord thy God in vain. At least that's what the man, and in essence, that's what he did. And the man looking on who finally decided that day that he's going to talk to that man because he was a Christian. And he was always the first at the, you know, first at the on the job and the last to leave. He says, I want to talk to this guy about his Lord because he's always happy. He's always in a good mood. Now, whoa, wait a second. What's he doing? He's stealing my paperclips. That's it. I don't want nothing to do with that guy's God. He took the Lord's name in vain. So going on, this is a prayer that, like this one that Solomon just prayed, this is the prayer of a child of God that wants only what God has to offer, period. That's it. End of story. If you want me to be poor, fine. There's a reason you want me to be poor, because maybe with my faith I can reach the poor, because I can relate. You want me to be rich? Fine, I'll be rich, because then I can reach the rich and talk to them about my faith, because I can relate. The study also goes on to share from another book written by Solomon, wherein he says, he that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver. How many is, you know, the miser attitude? You know, you just keep stacking it up. Never spend it, just keep stacking it up. So he that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This is also vanity. When goods increase, they are increased that eat them. In other words, you get friends coming out of the woodwork, right? So you got a couple of bucks. Everywhere you turn, you got a buddy. All of a sudden, you don't have any money. You got crickets. You don't have, there's nothing. So when goods increase, they are increased that eat them. And what good is there to the owners thereof, saving the beholding of them with their eyes? Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verses 10 and 11. You know, this is something I saw many times over the, you know, the years, you know, with in my pilgrimage on earth. I've seen rich men that love silver totally unsatisfied with the heaps of silver they already have. And some were so in love with it that they refused even to help their own children who were in need, causing great distress to them. I remember, you know, taking that one young man into our home because his father, who had the means to care for him and even, you know, get him his own apartment if he had to, kicked him out because he was 18. At least that was his excuse. You know, such people can never come to a peace in the heart because they will never have enough silver or gold. The minute they pile up one mountain, they seek to reinvest that mountain in building another mountain. Their lives are filled with anxiety as they watch their investments like a hawk. They watch their investments, you know, each and every day of the week. And so contentment goes out the door so as to keep building on what they lusted after. You know, they're not happy if they're not, you know, not making any money. I mean, this causes nothing but grief day after day. Remember what happened? Well, none of us were. Well, I don't think there's anybody here in their 90s. But I remember my dad was born a year after the crash, the stock market of 29. But I remember him relating to me when I was young via his mom, what she saw. And then when my mom would ask me to take her to the library, I remember going through the microfiche or film and reading about the crash back then too. People that were once millionaires all of a sudden lost everything in the stock market, jumped out of buildings, killed themselves because their money was gone. And like when I was selling, we remember the Black Tuesday, I think it was Black Monday and Black Tuesday, I think this was in the 80s, I was working for Prudential. And I was selling stocks, bonds, money markets, that kind of a thing, mutual funds, and as well as regular insurance and all that other garbage. But I preferred the stocks and bonds. But I remember some of the clients calling because, you know, everything was going downhill. You had that crash, that mini crash on Monday and Tuesday. And these guys were hysterical. You know, one guy, you know, he gave a lot of money and 80% of it was gone in one day. I says, man, if you take it out now, it's gone permanently. But if you leave it in, but no, he loved it so much, he took it out. And within 2 weeks, everybody, you know, everything corrected itself and he was out. That's just, and that probably ruined his life after that. He's so worried. He shouldn't have been investing in the first place. And you know, see, this is why I've always hated it. Even when I was selling insurance, I didn't even have car insurance. I didn't believe in it. Didn't like it. I says, I'm not going to, and I wasn't even a Christian. And then during those times, I became a Christian, of course, and continue to sell it, but eventually the Lord got me out of there because I caught them fudging the numbers, and I made mention of it and called some clients, and then they fired me. Because truth is truth. You can't be telling people one thing and the truth is another. But yeah, we can't base our faith on money. But there's people that watch this stuff like a hawk, and Satan makes them forget that they have enough money to live many lifetimes. You know, these millionaires and billionaires, and so they could actually stop investing so as to put their attention on the better things in life, like faith and family. I mean, could you imagine if they just, look at Gates. He keeps pushing all these strange New World Order agendas and population, you know, he's coming up ways to kill people by the tens of millions by using vaccines and stuff. There's videos out there where he's actually saying some pretty strange things, like population control. They all seem to think that we have no room left on the planet because they're all believing the lie. If they were to pull their money out of the stock market, they would have ample cash to spend time with their loved ones as well as time to seek the Lord. But Satan cannot have them do this. So he keeps them busy making more and more and more money. Their contentment is gone. And all they have to have is anxiety and the addiction of investing, wherein, like the gamblers, it controls their every waking moment. Because what's the difference? That's why, as a church, you can't, you know, remember what happened with the Ninth Hour Church? They invested, what was it, $60 million in the stock market. And some of the, I got it on SDA Apostasy, some of the things that they invested in, you know, it's bad enough you're gambling. I mean, that's a sin outright. And you're using the tithe to do this? So the Lord took it all away from them. They lost it all. And some of the stuff they were investing in, you're supposed to, like pork and liquor and stuff, you can't be, you know, helping those businesses defile people. But anyway, the study goes on to share a statement Paul made to Timothy, wherein he says, "But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us be therewith content. But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But thou, O man of God, flee these things and follow after righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, and meekness." And again, that's 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 to 11. And that's what, that was sound advice, of course, but there's so many people out there. And it's the way our cities are designed too. I mean, this is what always irked me as a young man, and I think this is one of the reasons my dad did what he did when it came to buying the house, when we finally got the nice house where all 11 kids could fit. And he bought a house from a developer that wasn't developing in the subdivision that we were at, because you had four choices. And he says, "I don't want a cookie cutter neighborhood," is what he called it, because that's where he grew up, brownstones in Chicago, you know, with his mom. And every building's the exact same. And so that's, well, on top of being boring, he wanted to stand out, of course, which wasn't a good idea. But the thing is, I don't get this, the suburbs of America and how they're and why they're set up the way they are. I just don't get it. For those of us that have downloaded Google Earth, have you ever zoomed into a neighborhood and stopped about 500 feet off the ground? Looks like sardines in a can, don't it? I mean, the people are packed in. And they're always packed in around the big cities. Why? Well, that's where the money is. So they think. I mean, if there's no money out where I'm living, out in the middle of nowhere, and this is what I try to instill in some of my loved ones that moved back to the city. I said, "Well, that's where the jobs are." Yeah, well, that's where you're also going to be paying $2,000 a month just to rent. Well, and of course, that was 20, 25 years ago. It's much worse now. And the gas prices are higher, and the food prices are higher. Everything much higher in the city. Well, so is our paychecks. It was, yeah. But it's not in comparison with that which is out here in these paychecks. I mean, if there's no money out here, and you explain all the houses out here in the rural areas. The difference here is out in the rural areas, when you get to Google Earth, you have to stop at 1,000 feet to see the houses close enough together. Because the houses are a half a mile to a mile apart, in some places 5-10 miles apart. And that's how all of us can live on this planet. I remember watching that one video that Baugh did, where he had the statistical engineer on this one time. And this guy was he was one of those savants. So now, he wasn't he was into the numbers. I don't think he was an idiot savant, and that's not a bad term. It just means you're locked in one area, kind of like autism, but you're locked in with numbers, and you can just do anything in the world with numbers. But he was one of those guys that was you know what I just said. I'm not going to repeat it. Statistical engineer. There you go. But Baugh asked him, he says, and at that time when he did the video, it was like 6.5 billion people on the planet. And he says, how much room would we need on planet Earth if we built a city as big as, like, designed like Paris, where you're packed in like sardines with the skinny little roads? How big of a city would we need to house 6.5 billion people? And he was making a point here. The guy takes a ballpoint pen out of his pocket and he makes a dot on that globe. You know the globes that you have on your desk in school? You know, the teacher always had a globe on her desk. It was about the size, a little bigger than a basketball, right? Well, this globe was about twice that. It's one of those fancy globes, you know, the big brown ones. It's about twice that size. And he taps it somewhere in Canada and made a little blue dot on the globe. And he says everybody would fit just fine right there. Because he was, he knew the numbers, he knew the spaces, he knew how to, because that's what he's done for his career. He was in his 60s, he had been doing it 40 years, he knew exactly how much room would be needed to house that many people. But yet, they're out there trying to do this population control. It's because Satan wants everybody dead, of course. He wants to, of course, get as many that are a problem, get them dead and get them locked into hellfire. But have you ever driven through Colorado? Parts of Indiana, as a matter of fact. In Indiana, like I was talking to Brother Bennett earlier on the phone, this nation was settled from the east to the west. Even though they, for some reason, once you got to Indiana, everybody did a big jump and leaped all the way to California. And then, because there was gold in them thar hills. And so everybody just, started going to the west. And so, but the midsection, the breadbasket of the nation, I mean, there's all sorts of open space. And it'd be so much better if mankind would have settled this earth that way, settled this nation at least, that way. I think some countries like Ireland have a lot more people living in the rural areas than they do in the cities, and it's because of the beauty, for one thing. I mean, the rolling hills and the cliffs of Dover and all that stuff, I guess. But it's really, really beautiful. I've Google Earthed it. I like flying around and looking at that stuff all over sometimes. And so, but the devil needs everybody packed in really tight for two reasons. Number one, it'll get you to sin to keep up with the Joneses. Number two, when it comes time to force the mark of the beast, you can sew a city up in 5-10. Well, now it's 20 minutes. It was 20 minutes. And what I mean by that is, and I'll close with this. There was this man who worked for the government years ago, and I remember sharing this years ago in here and on the radio. And he was given a task by the President of the United States. And I think at this time it was Clinton. And he wanted him to devise a plan to be able to sew up a large city like Chicago under martial law, and it would have to be done under 45 minutes because you've got to be able to get that whole city surrounded to stop the people from leaving as well as from getting in. All right? Because of certain things that they're going to do, and they don't want the people on the outside knowing what they're doing, and they don't want the people on the inside telling them what they're doing. And they're going to, lock down the phones and stop the internet the whole 9 yards, right? And this guy was calculating it. He was getting it, but he thought he could do better. And so what he did is he went to a chiropractor who happened to be a Sabbath-keeping chiropractor and asked her to put him on a specific diet that would help him focus and calculate better, to clear up his brain. And she did, because he says he has a specific task from the government, and he wants to be able to do his job really well. And so I think it was like 6 to 8 weeks. He came back and he said, thank you. And then he and she asked him, what is it? What was the task? And this is what shocked her. And this is how I got rid of it. He says, the task is the president wanted me to be able to sew up a city like Chicago, as big as Chicago, within 45 minutes. But thanks to you, I've been able to figure out how to do it in 20 minutes. And I think, I don't know why the number 12 comes to mind, but I'm thinking it was 12 minutes. But 20 is bad enough. 12 minutes is just crazy. But they can do this now. And so diet has a lot to do with all that's going on. But see, that's one of the reasons that I said for the big cities, it's so much easier to control the masses. And yeah, okay, living out in the rural areas, they can still control you if you go into the city to get supplies. But we know what's going to go down during the buy and sell thing. We're going to have to be self-sufficient by that. This is why a lot of us have our own gardens. Get used to tilling that soil. Get used to how Mother Nature, well, as they call it, but you know, get used to how the planet works and feeds itself and feeds its crops that you put it. Get used to growing those plants. Even if you fail a few times, don't worry about it. And then you might want to also look into what's growing in your yards. If you're living in the rural areas where you don't spray Chemlawn all over the place, that's actually a name of a company that I know about. Because back when I lived up in the city when I was a teenager, I couldn't see a dandelion for miles. Now, you know, I've got a few thousand of them in my area on my lawn. This time of the year, they're not out now, but there's food right there. There's plantains all over the place. There's stuff growing all over my lawn that people call weeds that I can eat. So you might want to look into that too, because the Lord does say that he's going to spread a table for us in the wilderness. So don't worry when they say you can't buy and sell. He's going to get you something to eat. If you don't believe me, ask Elijah when you see him. Hope and pray that you were blessed by what was shared. I'll be back in a minute.